Keith Smith is joining us now here on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Check out his work on Spot Rack or the Front Office Show. Keith, thanks for joining us. We're in a weird place when it comes to the Bulls. And the place that we're in is we're on the line of anger and apathy. And it's very easy to cross over to the apathy, but we're trying not to. What did you think of what they did pre-draft and in the draft?
Yeah, I think in the draft, I don't have a problem with drafting Noah Senge. I think that's a fine pick where they were at. There wasn't anybody screaming out to me as like, oh my gosh, I can't believe they passed on, you know, the players who went behind him. Carter Bryant maybe could have argued might have been a better pick. Maybe Derek Queen. There's rumors out there that maybe they passed on that trade up package from the Pelicans, which is a little scary if they did, because that was such a good return that they could have gotten there. But I think that pick is okay. I didn't love the idea of, I can't remember if it was Artoris or Mark who came out and said, this guy's going to be back. And this guy basically rattled off the whole roster. And it's like,
it was Mark.
What are we saying in that comment? Like, we saying we're good. We're just not going to make any changes, or, you know, because then if you do, like, why did you say it? If you don't, you know, like, are you basically telling people tune in October and see where we're at? So it just feels like they're a little stuck right now and not moving in any one direction.
I think you landed on the most frustrating thing from yesterday in terms of the audio and that moment, because he said, look, he rattled off a bunch of players, including Kobe White. And I like Kobe White a lot, but that means you're not even going to entertain trade talks for Kobe White. And he rattled off Josh Giddey as somebody who's definitely going to be back. So at all costs, they're bringing Josh Giddey back. So yeah, it does feel like some status quo. Can you let people know what that trade package was? Because the Pelicans jumped up and they gave up an unprotected pick from next year, right? And what, again, will be a good and deep draft.
Yeah, so the Pelicans, what he said was Joe Dumars said he started calling teams at 9 until he landed with Atlanta, who had the 13th pick, that agreed to take in the 23rd pick and then an unprotected pick, which is the best of the Pelicans or the Bucks next year, who both have a lot of questions about where they're going to be as teams, that was what it was ultimately to move up there. And they moved up to that one spot behind the Bulls at 13. And the only reason I'm reporting that is because Joe Dumars said it. So I don't know why he has a lot of reason to not say that. So that's where, you know, if that is true, That's tough. That's a tough look of, you know, you passed up on moving back one pick and getting an unprotected pick from two teams that there's a chance things don't go well for them next year. That's pretty tough.
It is tough. And it makes you wonder, like, what they're doing from a decision-making standpoint and some of the choices that they've made to go back to make trades to try and rectify picks that they've given away. And it just seems like they're playing from behind a lot. The news this morning about Masai Ujiri was a little shocking. One, I'd love to know why you think this happened in Toronto. And two, even though the Bulls have a fully staffed front office, should Michael Reinsdorf entertain the idea of making a call to Masai Ujiri?
Yeah, to the first part of it, sounds like Masai Ujiri and the leadership of the group that owns the Raptors have not been necessarily on the same page for a little while now. Masai Ujiri I think there's a misconception of how involved he's been in the day-to-day running of the Raptors front office. His title there was president of the team, not just like president of basketball operations and all these other fancy things that we call what we used to just call a general manager. He was the president of the team and also a vice chairman. And Bobby Webster has been running that team day-to-day for a while now. So I think there was a sense of, hey, we're no longer on the same page with things. Because you're in this elevated role, there's an expense attached to this. It's just time to move on. And the timing is weird in between the draft with free agency in a couple of days. That part optically is a little off. But I think this was headed in this direction. As far as should the Bulls call him? I mean, sure, I guess. There's been multiple times where I feel like the Bulls could have called on people, but it seems like they like the guys they have and they're content to move forward with those guys and have faith in them. So I don't know that they're going to make that kind of call.
So, yeah, we don't think so either. And the way you just described it, it's how do you look at the power structure and what is perceived to be the plan that the Bulls are executing here? Because it sure does seem like, you know, guys getting extended for mediocrity or maybe just above mediocrity, but with not a lot of hope for bigger things. Like, how does the league look at where how the Bulls are structured and what their overall plan seems to be?
Confusion is one way I would put it. It feels like a lot of people around the league are, is their goal to be somewhere between 7 and 10 every year? Because if they are, that's probably where they're going to be, is somewhere between 7 and 10. That's the, I the quote of we lost a hard fought game or a heartbreaker in the play-in, like, but no one cares if you lost a hard fought game in the play-in tournament. I think Bulls fans are smart enough. They've watched a lot of basketball. They'd rather be the 13th team in the league than the, you know, team that was 10th and lost in the play-in tournament, because at least then you have a better shot of moving up in the lottery. But it feels like there is a sense of just be good enough to be in the mix. But why are we going to go all in and go get guys? And there seems to be a bit of misplaced faith in our young group or the guys we've either drafted or acquired of they're going to get there. They're going to get there. And then what happens is, oh, they didn't get there. Now we have to move them. And it's either move them when there's not as much value or you're moving them, not always at a loss, but just, all right, we need to move them because now we have to move them. And that's where it gets tough. Like, you look at Patrick Williams, they hung on so long that now it's become, if you trade Patrick Williams, you're not getting good value in any kind of deal for Patrick Williams. And he's got a lot of years left on his contract. And that gets really tough to deal with.
Keith, how common is this around the league? Are there other teams that have this just try to be decent approach around the league?
There have been, but it's over, I would say, let's say the past 5 to 6 years, I think we've seen a shift in mindset in the NBA, and it really is driven from ownership on down of, all right, we want to win. We want to win at a high level. Like, look at the Washington Wizards. They were in the position the Bulls are in for basically 2 or 3 decades of, we're just going to be good enough to be a playoff team. Maybe if everything goes right, we win a round or two and, you know, off we go. But for the most part, it was just be a playoff team. Then 2 years ago, they bring in a new front office. And part of that new front office even agreeing to come in was, you have to let us do our thing. We have to be allowed to tear this team down and really start all over. They very candidly said 1 year ago, we are still in the teardown phase. After they had already traded Bradley Beal out, after they had already moved on from some guys, it was, we're still not even at the bottom of this yet. And what Wizards fans' reaction was, good. We have a direction. We are not no longer just content to chase being a play-in team, be the 8th seed. We have a direction now, and we can deal with it. We'll watch the kids. They've got all these young kids, and you know what? They stunk last year, but I know more Wizards fans are like, it was far more enjoyable to watch those guys develop than watch some team chase trying to be 9 or 10 in the conference.
One of my biggest fears, Keith, is that they'll look around at the Eastern Conference and go, oh, well, Dame's got an Achilles. Tatum's got an Achilles. Halliburton's got an Achilles. We'll get better because of the attrition of the other team. And I don't find that to be satisfying as an NBA fan. And it bothers me that I even think that they do.
I'm with you on that, because if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers or New York Knicks and you're like, man, we're not going to do a whole lot, because you know what? We're already pretty good. We're pretty close. Let's go. I live in Orlando, so I've been around the Magic a lot. The Magic used to kind of sit around where the Bulls did for a little while. The Magic have then bottomed out, built up through the draft. And this year, what did they do? Let's go get Desmond Bane. Let's really, that's not an all-in move. It's not a, here's every single pick we've ever got and all these young guys, but it's a pretty big move to bolster what the young core has already grown into, and let's go forward. There's a world where the Bulls could do that. They've got some nice young players. They've got some guys I like, but they don't seem willing to go that way, nor do they seem willing to, all right, you know, Vucevic is a nice player, but what's he doing on a 35-win team? He'd be a nice, you know, center on a team that's trying to win 48 or 50 games and be a playoff team, or a really, you know, good guy if we could get the right deal for a team that's trying to be a little bit more. You know, you could do that. And that's where it gets a little stuck. And the thing that kind of bums me out for them is they don't have, like, singularly bad contracts. Even Patrick Williams, I know people are down on it, but it's not awful money. And they could be in a position where you could have packaged together some of those contracts and went and got a guy who could maybe lift you up. Or the other option is go the other direction, really bottom them out, go super young and try to build up that way. But instead, it's just let's kind of keep trying to reload around the same kind of good but not great players. And that's why every year they're landing somewhere around the play-in tournament.
See, that's the thing. It's like the way that you guys are talking about, like afraid that they would just kind of, you know, try to get a little bit better in a sagging East. If you're going to do that, they could have tried to get a lot better.
Yes.
And they didn't do that. They didn't do that either with the caliber and readiness of the pick. You know, you could have drafted somebody who could maybe help you a little bit right away, or the kind of trades that you're talking about. So they're not doing either. They're staying in their middle without trying to get a little better and compete, and without trying to bottom out.
Yeah, and I guess in the draft, too, again, the value of drafting Noah Senge where they did is fine, but there's now a little bit of overlap with Modest Bouzelis, who I like quite a bit. I think he's going to be a pretty good player, but I don't know that him and Senge are going to be your forward combo moving forward that's going to take you to the next level. I'm a little worried about those two together. So that part does start to turn it a little where we going with this. If are we just going to draft not the same guy, but there, and I know you played the clip before I came on, I heard the tail end of it there. Like, I do think a lot of people thought Modest Bouzelis was going to be okay. I don't know that anybody thought that was necessarily a bad pick.
Yeah.
When it was made, I think everybody's like, oh yeah, he's going to take some time because he's a young kid. He only played at G League Ignite, which was a messy situation, but I think a lot of people were high on the potential there. So I'm not sure that's the selling point for, hey, let's do it again with another guy. Now, if Bouzelis had really popped already, then you could be like, all right, hey, I trusted you. We've already got our guy, but now you get this overlap. I'm just not sure that's where I wanted to go.
Hey, so Keith, we heard this was going to be a really active and possibly volatile offseason. We've seen the Durant trade. We've seen the Bane trade. We saw some of the movement that happened on draft night. Free agency starts on Monday. You wrote about it with all the cap space that's available. Is there going to be more trade activity? How big might it get? And I mean, I don't know if we should expect the Bulls to be in it or not. Maybe not from the sound of it, but how active is it going to be?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really active. I do want to couch it with, we've seen like five blockbuster trades already. So I don't want, you know, it's funny. We had people on our show, front office show today being like, when are things going to happen? What do you mean? Like, things have already happened. Like, we've already seen a lot of stuff. But I do think it's going to be active. The Brooklyn Nets are the only team with any kind of meaningful cap space, and they've got in the range of $40 million. Nobody else has cap space this summer. So if you want to improve your team, the way you do it is going to be through trades. And there are a couple teams that are sitting there kind of looking at the landscape and saying, hey, if we hang on to guys, maybe we make a play-in tournament push. But if we move a guy right now as an early mover this summer, we might get more value. Then later, when there are another 6-7 sellers on the market, if we're an early seller, maybe we can make some moves. And then you have, because the league feels pretty wide open, the fact that the Pacers push the Thunder to game 7, I haven't met a single person who thinks the Thunder are a not deserving champion, but I also haven't met anybody who said, well, they're inevitable. That's it. They're going to be there every single year. We're all playing for second. Teams feel like they can beat them. The league feels wide open. That's why you're going to see teams kind of gearing up and going for it. And I think that's going to make for a pretty wild summer.
What's the number in your mind, since Josh Giddey is an RFA, that the Bulls should let him walk if he gets on the open market?
Yeah, the number is probably going to be a lot higher. It may be a little shocking than what I think most people would think it is. Because when you get into a position like with Josh Giddey, you have to factor in where the cap growth has gone. So I think if it gets much north of 25, maybe 28 million, you have to start thinking like, all right, we're going the other way. Here's the challenge. Who's giving him that kind of offer? I don't know that there's a team out there that's going to give it to him. And that's where I think the Bulls, it kind of works a little bit more in their favor, maybe more towards the 25 million range for a guy like Josh Giddey than getting up into the 28, 30 million. Cause they just don't think the Nets are parachuting in with an offer like that. Nor do I think a team's coming in with anything like that through sign and trade.
If the number is over, let's say it's 20, let's call it 25 million. Do you think that that's good money for the Bulls to extend Giddey?
I think it's okay because they don't have a lot of long-term salary locked up on their books. And the important thing to note is a salary that's less than $30 million, I mean, sounds crazy, right? Because that was close to a max deal. That's the lowest-end max deal next season is $38.6 million. So you're well under that. If you're under $30 million, you're talking about 20% of the cap or so, and then it won't grow as much as the cap will grow over the next couple years. You can pitch the idea of, hey, just, you know, don't do that. Let's go into next summer with a whole crap ton of cap space because they would only have a couple deals on the books and they could really be in a good spot to go after people. But we kind of talked about it. That's not what they do. So I'm in favor of locking up Josh Giddey to a reasonable number. I think 25-ish, you know, maybe a little more is a fairly reasonable number for him because I'm just not sure they're going to jump in and go spend a whole, you know, ton of cap space.
You know, it feels, frankly, exactly like the conversation around Zach LaVine as a restricted free agent the first time when he signed the Sacramento offer sheet. Yeah, they should because they don't have a lot of other guys lined up. And then when it was time for Zach to be a max, yeah, they should because he's basically a max. And then you end up trading him when the value has gone down. And before you know it, 7 years have gone by and you're still the Bulls. That's what it feels like, frankly, Keith.
That's why you have to be careful. You can't do the max on the next one, right? And by the time we're to the next one, a max for Josh Giddey is going to be like $65 million a year. So that's where you got to be like, well, hold on now. Now we're not doing that. Like we're gonna hang out here a little bit and we'll let this play out a little. That's where you have to be really responsible because in the new world, not to make this like a Taylor Swift song, but the NBA is living in their apron era, right? Like you have to be really cautious now.
The second apron is killer.
That's it. You have to be cautious of the guys you max out. You max out the wrong guys, all of a sudden you're sunk, and then you might be picking near the top of the lottery. Just because you are, and you might be bad just because you're bad. But you may be like, we got to nail these picks because we're stuck in cap jail for a while.
Man, this was so much fun. Thanks for all of the information. This was top-notch stuff, man. Keith, you're good people, and we'd love to talk to you as we get closer to the regular season.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Anytime you need me.